Bridgebank helps breakthrough ideas actually break through and remains dedicated to providing financial solutions to those committed to leveraging innovation to make the world a better place. Bridgebank, a division of Western Alliance Bank. Bridgebank, be bold, venture wisely.
Hey there, this is Brittany Luce from NPR's It's Been a Minute. KQED's podcasts like The Bay, Bay Curious, Mindshift, Right Nowish, and more all tell the stories of the Bay and beyond with reliable, human-centered journalism. They aim to inspire, make you think, entertain, and expand your understanding of the place you call home. Here's how you can support podcasting at KQED.
Showing your support is easy, and you can join Brittany in supporting KQED Podcast too at donate.kqed.org/podcast. That's donate.kqed.org/podcast.
From KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. The risks street vendors take to sell their goods came into stark relief when 45-year-old Lorenzo Perez was shot and killed in broad daylight last month in Fresno while selling food from a bicycle cart. The pandemic has also led to a drop in sales for vendors amid a rise in thefts and assaults. Joining me now is Nadia Lopez, a Latino Communities reporter for the Fresno Bee. Thanks so much for joining us, Nadia Lopez.
Hi, I'm happy to be here.
Also with us is Mari Bolaños, reporter covering immigration and underserved communities for KVPR. Mari Bolaños, happy to have you here as well. And Nadia Lopez, I will start with you first. Can you tell us more about Lorenzo Perez and what happened to him in March?
Yes. So I spoke to the wife and son of Lorenzo Perez. He was an elotero who was shot and killed while he was working in a southeast Fresno neighborhood. He was a father of four. He lived in a really poor neighborhood in Fresno, sole breadwinner of the family. And like many other street vendors, he was not legally authorized to work in the U.S. So he worked, 10, 12-hour days sometimes, and he'd come home in the evenings, and he would stay up all night making his paletas and nieves by hand, prepping his elotes for the next day, and often selling these items for just a couple dollars a piece. So these are, there are many more vendors across the state in Latino communities that fit this profile.
And what happened to him last month?
He was working just another regular sunny afternoon on a Sunday, and the assailant went up to him and engaged in a brief conversation before he pulled out a gun and shot him in what police say was an execution-style killing. They shot him in the head, and he immediately was unresponsive and died. So it came as quite a horrible shock, understandably, to the family and the community as well. He was killed right next to a daycare center or a school. So you could imagine how community members felt so afraid after that.
How has the pandemic made things harder for street vendors, in addition to this increased anxiety that sounds like it's really, and fear and sadness that is gripping the community there?
Yes, well, street vendors, it's a largely immigrant workforce. Many are undocumented, poor, don't speak English well. They carry cash with them and are often alone, and that makes them prime targets for crime. And because they're undocumented, they're less likely to report incidents to the police out of fears. And that's why so many people and advocates say that they estimate many more violent crimes like assaults and robberies and thefts go unreported. And as you mentioned, the pandemic has really exacerbated all of these existing vulnerabilities. Many of the places where vendors stand, near public transport, banking centers, public plazas and squares, they've all had less foot traffic during the pandemic. And with less people on the streets, vendors have not only like lost income, but also the safety that comes from being in a place with a lot of foot traffic. And in places where, like Fresno, where there's significant economic need, communities of color are already disproportionately suffering from poverty.
Madre Bolaños, can you talk about how Fresno is responding to all of this, from community members and advocates to community leaders?
Sure. So from the beginning, there was a lot of outpour of support. I know they held some vigils immediately after he was killed. And in addition to that, community organizers, community members have really rallied and started organizing protection efforts that look like providing PPE, pepper spray, taking donations for video and audio recorders so that street vendors can feel that safety in a time where they're all super anxious and, you know, not sure how they can continue, but at the same time having to continue because, like Nadia said, it is their only source of income.
And so that seems somewhat like PPE and pepper spray, like a rather short-term solution. Nadia Lopez, are there other efforts that are more structural potentially?
Yes, definitely. In Fresno, following the most recent murder of Lorenzo Perez, because there have been other reported incidents in the past year as well, city and police officials have established a food vendor association. The city says it will provide like additional protections for vendors. They want to equip them with sirens and cameras. There's no cap currently on the spending for the association, and they hope that it will go towards security efforts, getting them legally permitted and their business licenses, because that's another concern for vendors as well, who, if they're not legally permitted and something happens to them, they're less likely to go to the police. So they're hoping that the city's hoping that, you know, helping to sponsor some of those things at no additional cost to the vendors will encourage them to facilitate, you know, more trust with law enforcement. But with that, a lot of advocates say that, you know, police presence alone and even the streamlined permitting process won't necessarily guarantee safety, because a lot of the issues that street vendors face are really systemic.
We're talking with Nadia Lopez, Latino Communities reporter for the Fresno Bee, and Mari Bolaños, a reporter covering immigration and underserved communities for KVPR. We're talking about the increased danger street vendors face during the pandemic and efforts to help them. And Nadia and Mari are two members of the Central Valley News Collaborative. I want to invite you, our listeners, to join the conversation. What questions or comments do you have about the situation for street vendors? Do you have an experience to share as a street vendor? What would you say is the biggest risk that you think street vendors face? 866-733-6786 is the number to call if you want to weigh in. 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter or Facebook at KQED Forum. Email us forum@kqed.org. Mari Bolaños, advocates are talking about how the street vendors face regular attacks. Fresno police say there were 6 incidents involving street vendors across the city last year. So are these attacks underreported, as Nadia says, and do you think that some of the calls for increased police presence is something that vendors will welcome?
Oh, there are definitely more than go reported. Some of the vendors that I spoke to have faced not attacks, but they've been robbed, and that has left them shaken up. Angelita Rodriguez, one of the vendors I spoke to just a few months ago, was robbed of like her most expensive blankets. And then since then, she's been hesitant about returning to work, especially after hearing what happened to Lorenzo Perez. And then another couple who also sell clothing and shoes and like construction gear on a street corner in Fresno, they were robbed of some of their material as well. They say they want more protection, but they're wary of more police protection, especially after a Fresno police officer was just fired for being a Proud Boy member. So it's clear that they know that they want protection and that they need it, but I think the means of that protection is still a little fuzzy. And they're just wary because they don't have the best relationships with the police in our city, and to no fault of their own, but it's just something that they are worried about.
And Nadia Lopez, you had an interesting comment in one of your articles about this, that there's a general sentiment that usually nothing comes from reporting to the police, that many vendors view reporting robberies, as Nadia is describing, as futile. What typically happens after something's reported like this?
Well, yeah, a lot of street vendors feel that the cons of reporting something to the police outweigh the pros, because it's not like they're going to get whatever was stolen from them back. It's not like they're going to get their money back or their whatever items were stolen from them. And they fear that, well, if they expose themselves to the police, that if they're undocumented or don't have their legal permits to work, that that's something a police officer could potentially harass them about. So that's why they feel that, you know, it might not be worth their time.
Let me go to caller Christian in San Francisco. Hi, Christian.
Hi. I just want to pick up on a comment that Nadia earlier mentioned. So California's counties and cities are set to get about $16 billion from the American Rescue Plan. I think it would be a really good idea to use some of those dollars to help make sure that these street vendors can actually get the permits that they need, because it both helps the street vendor make sure that they get extra income. But it's also the public safety aspect to all this. They'd be more likely to go to the police should something occur to them.
Christian, thanks. Nadia, do you want to comment on Christian's point here?
Yeah, there have been a lot of efforts around the state. I think of particularly LA. For example, organizing efforts in places like LA have existed for a longer time. I spoke with an organizer from Inclusive Action for the City. It's like an LA-based street vendor advocacy group who has been really advocating for street vendors at the statewide policy level as well as locally to kind of get money to better protect them and to kind of enforce these policies that would prevent future crimes and assaults and such. But of course, that comes with political will. And now with this renewed attention in Fresno, I think and I hear from several people in the community that there could be that, and there is that movement and that political will to establish a more robust effort that would mirror something like in LA.
Yes, and by bringing up LA, and as you touched on earlier, while we're focusing on Fresno, what happened there and how the community there is responding, it sounds like there have been concerns, upticks also in thefts and assaults in other parts of the state. Is that right, Nadia Lopez?
Yes, that's right, for all of the same reasons that were previously mentioned. You know, those vulnerabilities have only been more exacerbated because of the pandemic.
And again, Nadia Lopez is a reporter for the Fresno Bee, Latino Communities reporter there. Mari Bolaños is a reporter for KVPR covering immigration and underserved communities. You, our listeners, are with us. We're talking about the increased dangers that street vendors face during the pandemic. You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Carlos writes, when I was 8, my mom and I became street vendors, and we would go out to several spots in Oakland to sell tamales out of a large backpack. Sometimes we would sell tamales very quickly, and other times it would take many hours. While we were worried of being robbed or hurt while selling at night, our biggest fear was losing our supply of tamales, because that represented a week of rent or food for us. To make sure we kept our tamales, we would always be on the move, never selling in one place for too long. We no longer sell tamales, but that chapter in my life has taught me so much about patience, kindness, and growth. Mari Bolaños, I'm struck by Carlos's comment because he is detailing in many ways the struggles, but also how it taught him about patience, kindness, and growth. I mean, in the best of times, what do you think people should understand about the street vendor community in Fresno?
Oh man, they're a part of your community as well as they're a part of their own street vending community. I have memories of street vendors coming to my street and getting so excited and running out and, you know, buying elotes or paletas or whatever. And it's just, they're a part of our community and they're people who are just trying to make a living and support their family. And I think that that's something that everyone should keep in mind. And they look different, right? It's not just people who are selling elotes or paletas, but they're selling clothes or they're selling Easter baskets or Valentine's Day things. And they're doing it, like I mentioned, to make a living, just like I think a lot of people in this country are doing. So I think to remember that they're people and they're just trying to survive.
And it's reminding me, Nadia Lopez, of a quote as well in your piece where you talk about how there's a sense of just a general lack of respect for street vendors. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, because they're vulnerable, because they don't speak English, or because they're poor, you know, people, they ignore them. They don't see them as, I mean, if they don't understand it, if they're not Mexican or Latino, sometimes it's difficult for someone to potentially understand why they're such a vibrant staple of Mexican culture. Street vendors have these deep cultural roots and Mexican American Latino communities in the U.S. It's one of those traditions that reflects the biculturalism that immigrants, first, second, third generations hold. And, you know, advocates and community members and the people that support street vendors all say that the violence against them threatens the vibrancy of their neighborhoods. And for people who want to learn more about that, you know, just go to a neighborhood and see the kinds of conversations street vendors have with the people who live there. You know, the music that plays from their carts, the festive cumbias and the dancing and the singing and the way the kids all line up to see them. And so they may look like just another passerby or just another person, you know, in the corner of your eye, but they mean so much more to those people.
Are you sensing anything different in the way Fresno has responded to Lorenzo Perez's killing, but also you've reported on two other violent and fatal attacks at the end of last year as well? Do you sense a difference or like stronger efforts, Mari Bolaños, to protect and respect street vendors now?
Oh, definitely. I think on the community level and on the city level that there are just so much more efforts being made to make sure that these community members feel protected and feel safe. And I think that that just shows how Fresno and the Fresno area is really coming together to support these people and to support the community in which they live in. So that's been something that has been great to see in what is a lot of tragedy.
And Nadia Lopez, so we're hearing that Fresno is going to try to, you know, install cameras, and there's efforts to provide pepper spray. There's efforts to create a street vendor association as well for broader support. One of the things that advocates talked about is the need to invest in multilingual education resources. Can you just talk about what that would do, where, what to make those investments for?
Yes, definitely. So a lot of advocates have stressed that, you know, street vendors need to feel like they have all the resources at hand to be able to obtain the business license, to be able to feel safer. And a lot of the times it's community organizations that are filling in that gap because they don't necessarily always have the best relationships or trust with local government or police. And so education and outreach is what advocates have been stressing. And that includes distributing information in Spanish and also having people who speak Spanish and having people who can communicate in these indigenous languages that a lot of street vendors primarily speak, so that they can get all of the information that they need. And that's also something advocates have been saying when it comes to police. And if you're going to increase police presence, you need officers in those communities who speak Spanish and who can communicate as well with street vendors and the people who live there. Otherwise, it's going to feel like just another intimidating force and presence in the community.
Has there been any relief or any update in terms of Lorenzo Perez's family?
Yes, there has been, as Maddie said, so much community support for this family. He was a father for the youngest of his children, who's a year old, and now it's up to his mother to, or his wife, to provide for their family. But the council member who represents the district in which he lived has really rallied alongside the community to provide a year's worth of free groceries for the family. He's looking currently right now to put them in a safer and better housing situation. So there really has been a lot of support for this family. And what they've told me is that they're grateful.
Well, Nadia Lopez, Mari Bolaños, thank you for your reporting on this. Also want to thank our producers, Blanca Torres and Susan Britton, for producing today's segments, and our listeners for their attention. I'm Mina Kim. You've been listening to Forum.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.
Support for Forum comes from San Francisco Opera. Set 10 years after a school shooting, the critically acclaimed opera Innocence takes us into a complex emotional journey where our understanding of innocence and guilt is constantly upended. Kaija Saariaho's ethereal score collapses the past into the present as a community of survivors grapple with how to move forward. Don't miss the highly anticipated American premiere of Innocence, June 1st through 21st. Learn more at sfopera.com.
We've all got those parts of our house where the internet just won't go. Well, if you had wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you could worry less about dead spots. Because with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you get fast speeds, reliable connection in every room, and power for all of your devices, even when everyone's online. That's wall-to-wall Wi-Fi, only with Xfinity. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.